Meow. Meow. Meow, 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 meow.
Meow, meow, meow. Meow, meow, meow. Meow, meow, meow. This is the Freedom Fiends broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves.
Yeah.
This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 365 degrees Fahrenheit to keep us in flood of statism out of your head.
Statism.
Can you feel it?
I really like
Is it working?
Statism.
Can you feel it?
Yeah.
Sure can, robot girl.
The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIP cut, no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at bipcot.org.
Yeah, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends, and I have
worms.
I have a progressive illness. I have a progressive, you know, like liberals, I have a progressive lung disease. And so I can't talk all that much without losing my voice. Also, because I'm on oxygen. Actually, the oxygen.
So we're relying on the robot.
So we're relying on the robot. And, you know, we do like to say that Barack
it's
Obama
a prosthetic voice.
Is a liar. Yeah.
Barack Obama is a liar, a socialist, and his feet stink.
That's all I got. So I'm done for the show. Go ahead, guys.
So, Nick, you wanted to talk about yak farming.
Yeah. So this week, I made a business mistake that I'm not
Energy
very proud
nifty.
Of. So I have this deal with this guy, and
Anarchy
I've proposed this to a few
Anarchy
people.
Anarchy is nifty.
Sorry, go ahead.
I could have them board some of their animals at my place, and they'd pay me per month and for hay to have their animals on my property, because I have extra property and I don't have enough money to buy more yaks. So it just fills up the property that's not being used. So I got this guy who's interested in doing it, and we had the deal set up. I was like, okay, we'll figure this out for hay and blah, 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 blah. And it turns out that I don't have enough hay, so we need to get more hay for this guy.
Are you having the drought the way California is there in Oregon?
Not nearly as bad.
All right.
It's been a decently dry year, but everything's coming early. We get enough rain, I mean.
All right.
But, yeah. So, I'm trying to get hay for this guy, and I thought I had figured out a way. My uncle, who lives just down the road from us, has a cattle ranch, and we thought we could get hay from this one place. And I talked to the people who own the property, and I had understood that we were going to be able to hay it,
hay
as
it.
Soon as possible.
Hay it?
Yeah, which means
all your
hair
belong
from
to us. All your hair belong to us.
What does hay it mean? Sounds like a party, man.
No, it means to cut the grass and take it and bale it.
Because, you know, hay was like a 50s jazzbo Negro slang for marijuana.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
That's not very appealing.
Yeah. I don't want to smoke hay. Oh, grass. In the 70s, it was grass. When I was a kid, it was
grass. Is at least green.
Yeah.
Hay is yellow. Okay.
Here, smoke some straw. All right. Go ahead, Nick. Hay it, brother.
Yeah, rope.
Hay it hard.
All right.
So haying some renters, some animals who are, I'm assuming boarding means renting your space, right?
Right.
Okay.
So, yeah, I thought I had a deal for getting hay out here, and I would have had enough, and but I had misunderstood, and I had no reason to assume that I would have actually had that. I should have assumed that, okay, there needs to be some more processes, and I need to make sure, because the organization that owns the field is, you know, some sort of nonprofit thing, and they have to.
Are
they
you a sharecropper?
No, but.
Okay.
There were more steps than I had thought, and I should have known that there were more steps, because this organization is affiliated with a school and things, so there's a little bit of a conflict of interest for them to let me just to do it.
Yeah.
And before I had learned the rest of the process, I told the guy, okay, I pretty much got this locked down. I'm ready for the yaks, that he's going to bring some yaks and put them on my field.
All right.
And then I went to a meeting to really propose.
Bring on the yaks. Bring on the yaks.
So I had a, I went to the meeting and I talked
release
to the people on it. So it,
release
it turns
the
out,
sorry, go
it
ahead,
turns Dave. Out that the, it turns out that they have to put it up for bid and the field. So I, it's not a guarantee that I'm going to get that field anymore. But I had told
who
the
says?
Guy, okay,
wait,
I'm going
to
be
says,
ready.
Who says you have to?
They do.
Because government.
They, right?
Well, kind of, yeah. So it's a complicated mess, and I don't want to get into details, and I don't completely understand it.
Get into details, if you don't mind robots
okay.
interrupting you.
No, it's okay.
What's sure. the what's the business decision you're... What's the... Is it just the jumping before you measured? Is that it? Cutting before
yeah,
you, whatever that expression is?
Exactly. So I had thought that I had a deal on hay before I did, and I told this guy that I had it, and it turns out that it's not a guarantee, so I had to let the guy know I cannot guarantee that I'm going to get hay now.
Measure once,
too
cut
late.
Thrice. Measure once, cut thrice.
No, that's thank not you, it. Robot.
He's wrong, though. The robot's wrong.
Well, go ahead, maybe Dave. That's the expression in robot lingo.
Measure once, cut thrice. Well, it kind of is, because they automate things.
Yeah, because they're like assembly lines,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and they can measure perfectly the first time. So go ahead. Sorry, Nick.
No, that's fine. And so I...
Nick finally talks more than he's ever talked, more excitedly and confidently than he's ever talked on this show, and this damn robot won't quit interrupting him.
I know it. You're discouraging me from talking.
I'll keep going. No, it's testing you under fire. It's improving your radio skills.
Am I doing well?
Yeah, man. You're winning.
All right. So I really kind
winning.
Of... it's not a
winning.
Mistake that I can... that I can't really make up, but it really put this guy under some pressure and uncomfortability because he doesn't know exactly if I'll be able to get a good price for his hay in the winter, which is frustrating for him, I assume, and I feel bad about it.
Well, that's part of business risks, right, is market uncertainty?
Sure, but I should have known that I should have waited till I had the deal confirmed.
Yeah.
And then told him.
Hmm. Yeah, well, so is the person who's having, is it second thoughts or whatever, but is it the hay merchant or is it the yak owner?
Or the animal owner? I don't understand. What are you asking?
Who's causing
you said
the
problems? That your customer is now feeling nervous that you're not going to be able to get the hay. Now, is that the hay merchant who's nervous or is it the person who's actually renting the space and housing his animals on your land that's nervous that now his animals aren't going to get hay?
It's the guy who's running the space.
I thought you were running the space.
I meant that. So, okay. The guy who's bringing his animals onto my property, boarding with me, he doesn't know, or neither of us know if we're going to get enough hay by then.
Davi, he said the guy who's renting the space, not the guy who's running the space.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Got it. All right, I'm clear.
So did you learn a lesson, or is it just a lesson, life's hard?
No, I learned my lesson.
What's the lesson?
Is to make sure that I'm very clear on what's going on before I tell everybody that I have a good deal.
Yeah, it's called market research and due diligence, I think.
Yeah.
So you're learning lessons that most people don't learn until college, and then only if they're in business college. So, Davi, what do you think about the future of America and today's utes? And what experience did you have with a woman who lives in your building today?
Oh, about the yak merchant thing?
Yeah, tell me that story.
So before we go there, I want to share sort of a similar experience that I had, because I learned this lesson at the tender age of like 33. So
I just learned it now. I never knew it before.
So I do this. I do shinybadges.com, right? And one of the things that I do, aside from my own pins, is I do pins for other customers. And so it was the same kind of situation. Like a client comes to me, he needs a service. I think I know what I can offer, but I didn't double check. And so I gave him a quote for a custom pin based on numbers of the pins that I had purchased myself. But here's the thing. All of the pins that I've done so far, at least 90% of them, they're with a brass metal. They're like, it's like a zinc alloy, but it's a gold color. And apparently the pricing for the silver color is much higher than the gold color. And so I quoted this guy based on the numbers that I knew. And then when I went to the manufacturer and I said, hey, I need this, it's the same thing I always order, I just need to change the metal, I should have obviously assumed that changing the metal would change the price.
And you'd think that gold would be cheap more than silver, not the other way around.
Well, it's because it's like steel and brass or something like that. I don't really color. Even know. It's just coloring. Neither of them are precious, but you order 1,000 things in some base metal, and it affects the price enough that, like, most of the profit on that order got sucked into my mistake. I didn't lose money on it, so it's not that terrible, but it's the same thing, right? Like, you want to check your supplier before you offer it to the customer.
Yeah, and you're pretty good about not assuming the customer should eat your mistake like a lot of people would be. You eat your mistakes yourself, right? Generally.
Yeah, I do, absolutely. Yeah.
Like when you got ripped off mistake. For $5,000 worth of other people's Bitcoin you had on hand.
Yeah, right, exactly. Same thing. It's because the trust in the agreement is with me. And so if I'm the one who is at fault, then I'm the one who has to make good. Makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I absolutely agree.
So, Nick, you had a topic that kind of... So, Davi, you're not going to tell your story about children and how they should be reared?
Oh, we can. I was having a conversation about Nick today and about yak farming. And the sort of question in the air was, is it a life's pursuit? And if it's not a life's pursuit, if you change your direction at some point, haven't you kind of like wasted your time when you should have been getting an education or something to that effect?
And you got but a I think disagreement like, with
you,
someone
this experience,
who...
Yeah. This experience you're talking about is sort of evidence that you are getting a business education.
Well, most 16-year-old people are getting no business education, and all they're doing is like picking things on the internet and favoriting them and forwarding them. That's like the extent of their skill set. And mm-hmm. I would say that having a business, even if you end up not making money at it, is far more of a valuable life experience than sitting around doing what most 16-year-olds do these days. Because one thing is it's become really hard for young people to get jobs, which gives you some kind of financial experience because of government. Yeah. Because government, you know.
But you can put yak farming on a resume.
Yeah.
Because government.
Absolutely.
Worms.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum. The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
But I'm off on a tangent.
You're also too busy talking to the talk radio.
Worms.
Worms.
I think I invented that tagline.
What?
Too busy talking to the talk radio.
Yep.
R2-D2 owes me money.
Shut up, robot. I don't know what that's about, but, you know, yeah. We do like to say this once a show.
Barack Obama is a liar, a socialist, and his feet stink.
All right, so we're going to back to talking about business. Business, what's it good for? Davi runs a business. We're going to talk about mistakes and how we learn from them, right, Davi? Right, Nick?
I know. I have a perfect example, which is, well, it's sort of reversed, but this is from your life, Michael, and that is consulting before you have something in writing about what your fee is.
Oh, yeah. What's that guy's name?
I don't know if you want to name it or not. I'll leave it to you if you want to name it.
I named him before. I just can't remember his name. I've said his name on here. Actually,
it's Jeff Berwick.
Yeah, Jeff Berwick. Yeah, actually, he went up drunkenly to somebody at, what was his thing? Anarchapuco. And was like
Anarchapuco.
Yeah, and was like mumbling to some friend of mine, like, Michael Dean said mean things about me on the show. No, I said the truth, man.
Yeah. It was sorted out, wasn't it? I was under the impression it wasn't like bad blood or anything. It's just sort of a bad taste in your mouth.
Well, that's on the same continuum. A bad taste in your mouth could be a little bit of blood coming up from your lungs, from your lungworm. Yeah.
I guess that's a slightly different lesson, but it's still a good lesson.
What, get things in writing? Yeah, I think so.
Especially well, it's with, sort of a measurement, right? It's a measure before
Luke,
you cut.
I am your father.
Yes,
Luke. I am your father.
I don't think that's true.
What?
I don't think the Freedom Fiend's prosthetic voice is the father of Luke Skywalker.
Dobby, I am your father.
I don't think that's true.
I know
either.
That's not true.
Yeah. All right. Well, okay. So we've used my bad example. You got some of your own? I'll think of some. I just, you know, I try to blot that stuff out. I learn from it. I learn the lesson from it and internalize the lesson, but I really don't like to think about the horrible decisions I've made and the pain it's caused me. But they're worth sharing because, as Steve Albini said when I interviewed him for the DVD extras of DIY or Die, How to Survive as an Independent Artist, it's far better to learn from someone else being horribly disfigured in a fire than to have to be horribly disfigured in a fire yourself to learn that lesson.
You know, I think that's the point of those sorts of anecdotes.
Yeah.
Is like the reason we tell stories like that is so that people learn from them and without, you know, having to undergo them.
Most people don't like hearing those kind of stories. They'd rather hear the, like, the bizarre success stories. And that's kind of magical thinking. And, you know, that's one thing I like about AA people and 12-step people is they will totally tell you, you know, without bragging and without shame, their lowest moments in detail and how they redeemed above it. You know, it's kind of part of the process.
Yeah.
Whereas that's really common. I mean, that's like basically the basis, part of the basis of 12-step fellowships. Whereas with most people, like, they want to hide that stuff and they certainly don't want to hear it from other people. Seems, I mean, like there used to be,
I
a don't, lot.
Like, I kind of feel like I wouldn't have, if I were in it, I mean, like, I see the value in it. I feel like I would be out, I would feel out of place in a meeting like that because I don't have a horror story as bad as some of I've heard, you know?
Pussy.
Well, it's just a fact of life. I steer up before I hit bottom, I guess.
Yeah, man. You're lucky. Yeah, I remember there was, and some people like kind of make their bottom in 12-step fellowships, like kind of make their bottom like a badge of honor, which I never really understood. Like, I remember there was this girl I knew who was like 21 who came into NA and she looked like really healthy compared to how most people come into NA. Most people come in when they're 30 or 40, just toe up from the flow up looking, you know, like a homeless bum. And, you know, with her teeth falling out and her hair falling
maybe
out.
Maybe she'd been clean for a while.
No, she came in, like, kicking drugs and got clean. But she just hadn't used very long and, like, just was kind of young and fresh. And I saw this, like, old, like 50-year-old. I'm old, 50-year-old. I'm just 50. But I was 30, so it was, like, old to me. This 50-year-old, like, biker dude walked up to her, like, her first meeting and said the coffee break and said, "What happened to you, little girl? Did you do a bong hit and fall off your skateboard?" And which is a really horrible thing to say to somebody at a meeting, because somebody who's like not as confident even in defeat as this woman was, you know, might have just left and never come back and ended up dying. But she just like looked him in the eye and she's like, "No, I was a heroin addict and I was selling my body for heroin. And I'm here trying to get better. Thank you." And he like apologized.
Good for her.
You know. Yeah. She got
right clean. On.
Yeah, good for her. So we'll be back.
Worms.
After this trip to the Worm Kit.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Worms for sale.
New Hampshire is under quarantine as walking corpses devour the flesh of the living. Max is 11 years old and surviving alone. Slow-moving and non-thinking, the dead swarm his home. Now he must apply his Porcupine Freedom Scouts training to improvise his escape. Look for Survivor Max on Facebook, read reviews on Amazon, or read Chapter 1 at SurvivorMax.com.
Meow.
Meow.
Worms.
The art made me do it, Your Honor. I blame the art. The art made me do it, Your Honor. I blame the art.
I think I'm going to have to call Zazzle.com and harass them, I think.
Yeah, you can do that tomorrow, but you should also tell the whole story on radio tonight. It'll give you more personal satisfaction and probably more actual satisfaction than complaining to the, most companies make it pretty much impossible to talk to a human now. And even when you can talk to a human, it's pretty impossible to get them to do anything. So we're burying
these
the
guys,
lead
they
here.
Have email hours on their site.
Email
you can't email
hours.
Them 24 hours a day. They have email hours.
Well, can you?
Monday through Friday, 3 a.m. to 6 p.m.
I've never heard of such a thing. That is bizarre. So tell me where to show me on the doll where Zazzle touched you and what happened.
So Zazzle, for those that don't know, is kind of like Cafe Press, and it's like a print people don't on even demand know that. For
it's where you get t-shirts. Okay,
well, it's print on demand, custom t-shirts and stickers and coffee mugs and stuff like that, where you just upload art and you can build a shop and people can buy your art on various things. And so I went and created Zazzle.com/campaign for nobody to put all of my Vote for Nobody designs and vote for various other people like Gridlock or
Vote for a Guillotine
or thing. Vote for a guillotine. So this is because screen printing is too expensive. I can't print all my designs, and I at least want them to be available on the sort of substandard print-on-demand service.
Yeah, it really
this
is substandard compared to screen printing. But screen printing, you know, people always say, why don't you have Freedom Fiend shirts? And I'm like, because it's a major investment to have shirts, and you really have to be far more popular than us to make it worthwhile. We have buttons, because buttons cost 30 cents each to make, and we sell them for about 35 cents each with postage. I barely make any money on it. I do it to, you know, get the word out there. And you don't have to have like 8 different sizes. Like with t-shirts, you have to have like at least small, medium, and large, if not extra large and extra, extra large and tiny, small.
And then
baby.
Women's sizes and then children's sizes. And then, it's a
hassle.
And
you have to have them on hand. Like, you know, the setup to even start selling one t-shirt design, you know, it's going to be hundreds of dollars to even have enough available to fill orders. So,
easily thousands.
Yeah.
No, like literally, it's thousands of dollars to do. Like, I keep on hand, let's see, 1, 2, 3. I keep 4 designs on hand of screen printed shirts, and it's easily $1,000 worth of merchandise.
Yeah. And Zazzle and Cafe Press, do a crappy version of it with like iron on stickers that they print on a computer printer. But it's something.
And then I get like a dollar a shirt.
It's something. Yeah. And they're cost more than screen printed shirts, right?
Yeah, they cost $25 a shirt, which is a bit excessive.
The art made
in my
me
opinion.
Do it. Your honor.
But
I blame the art.
It's also a market signal, right? So I can see over time designs are popular, and that will incentivize me to screen print the ones that are good. But here's the thing, they have an approval process, and this is where my beef with Zazzle begins. Their approval process is supposedly to protect intellectual property, but they have twice now rejected designs for Guillotine 2016, which is just the word guillotine, except that the letter O is red instead of black, and there's drips on it, and the number 2016, and it looks kind of like a campaign shirt. Now, this is original art, original concept. It's not a satire, and they send me an email that says, your art has been pulled from the site because your design contains an image or text that may be subject to copyright. And that's just not possible. There is nobody that doesn't. This does not exist. There's nobody
outside
out there who's
yours,
copyrighted the word guillotine.
Well, that'd be a trademark.
Copyright
it. But
do whatever you want.
Yeah. So is it reminiscent of any particular politician's campaign logo?
No, but they have approved multiple designs that are explicitly reminiscent of existing campaigns. Like Ready for Gridlock looks exactly like Ready for Hillary. And there's even already an intellectual property problem where Hillary's campaign tried to shut down the guy who was selling Ready for Oligarchy shirts.
Yes.
Which is the same design again. Kill the Precedent shirt. That's precedent with a C, not the other word that we can't say without a visit from the government. It's made to look like the Ron Paul shirts. Like the it has a little weird shooting star thing over the A. It's over the A and Paul, but it's over.
And
the
he's
H
never
and
gone
the,
after
on
you,
my shirt.
Even though he is really litigious with trademark, which is kind of funny, or intellectual property.
No, he never has.
Yeah.
So Zazzle has approved these designs, which are obviously derivative works, right? Like, I have one with, like, Agent Smith from The Matrix. I have one with Banksy's flower chucker throwing a Bitcoin. I have an End the Fed shirt in the Star Trek
Banksy?
Font. Banksy. What did I say?
I thought you said Banksy. It's his cousin from Poland.
Oh, okay. but anyway, the only thing I can think is there's one line in their terms of service that among the things prohibited by Zazzle is no excessive violence.
And there's something about the law. What's the thing about the law?
Oh, you cannot publish content which encourages anyone to violate the law.
Which led
but
to
if
this.
You, if it's
which
a
is
democratic beheading, then it's not a violation of law.
Yeah,
it's a democratic
agrees.
Beheading.
Yeah.
The art
if
made me do it.
To behead
Your honor.
The politicians, then it's
I blame
not a
the
crime.
Art. The art made me do it. Your honor. I blame the art.
Yeah.
But so that The hair that I want to split with them on the phone tomorrow, because I'm going to just assume that this is about violence, is the word excessive. It says no excessive violence. So if the rule is no excessive violence, there must be some non-excessive appropriate level of violence you can put on a t-shirt, right? And if it's not just the word guillotine and the suggestion, I don't know what else it could be. Like, yeah. I'm assuming they don't want, like, people with severed limbs and things like that on shirts, which maybe, well, I don't even understand.
There's probably
that,
zombie stuff on there like that.
I should test that.
Yeah.
I could put up a zombie, an excessively violent zombie shirt.
Again, I like that you're stirring your coffee, because this is like coffee time with the Freedom Fiends. It's a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I think this whole conversation is also assuming you're going to be able to get satisfaction with anybody at Zazzle, because, again, like, that's one of the problems of kind of the internet culture and kind of corporate culture these days, is like, they don't want to talk to the plebs. They just want to take your money. You know, customer service seems to have gone out the window. And, you know, it's not really monopolies. I mean, there's two or three big companies that do this kind of work to varying degrees. But, you know, it seems like when people get a big market share these days, they just fire all their customer service people or never hire them. I don't know.
Well, they didn't respond. I did email the email that they sent me, that if I wanted to dispute,
did you do it during
claim that
email,
it was a copyright infringement?
Did you do it during email hours?
I probably didn't do it during email hours.
Yeah, I wonder if the email hour thing is like, it's not, you know, it's not just we don't answer these except during these hours. Maybe it's like we delete emails that we receive except during this 8-hour period 5 days a week. That's hilarious.
Yeah, it's horrible. It's like a technicality they use to avoid emails.
Yes, yes. Yeah, I don't think you're going to get satisfaction.
You know what? They may have inadvertently incentivized me to make this the design that I screen print for Porkfest. Because, like, part of why I'm doing this Zazzle thing is to gauge popularity, so I know what to screen print for Porkfest. But if I can't even get it on Zazzle, and it's one of my favorite designs, frankly, this might just be the one.
That's the market signal. If Zazzle censors it,
that's the market signal.
You should actually put a sign on your table at Porkfest. It's banned by Zazzle. That could be a selling point.
Oh, yeah. It can be sort of like those stickers you put on CDs that say, like, excessive lyric or adult advisory.
Yeah,
or
which we're going to talk
about. Even, like, on cars and things, like, great deal and stuff like
that.
We're
going to talk about those
promotional. Yeah.
We're going to talk about those no cussing stickers, because I do want to get back to bad business decisions, because it's a good topic.
We need to do trigger warning stickers. That's what we need to do.
Yes, you do. You really need that, man. Warning, trigger warning. I like that. I think that's a, yeah, print those up, man. Put them on everything you sell. Yeah, which, you know, it's a new thing of, like, people want to be warned of anything that might offend them and make them think of violence or something. Yeah. So here's the thing. Okay, the customer service thing is not going to get better with time. It's going to get worse, because what they're doing now is they're kind of using, you know, AI is really in its infancy. Like, artificial intelligence is kind of where, like, probably, you know, dentistry was when it was done by blacksmiths. But it's getting better and better and better, to the point where, like, computers are not only going to be making decisions of, like, who to drone without any human involvement, they're also going to make decisions of, like, customer service and, like, what gets posted on websites. Like, we actually did a thing. I forget if it was you or somebody else, Davi, somebody on this show with me read this article about how Facebook screens things they don't want on their site. Like, basically, there's a few things with words that they'll have a human look at, but it's basically more like, if anybody clicks complain, it goes to a human, but the human's, like, in the Philippines or something, you know, it's not even somebody that's, like, in the country necessarily where the offense, so-called offense, took place, you know? So it's going to be somebody that has, like, a really probably different, like, moral view of things. Like, the Philippines is really Catholic, for one thing. You know, so you're probably going to have someone who's, like,
that
religious
surprises me.
Looking at it. Yeah, so you're going to have, you know, that's how it works. Like, basically, if you flag something on a social network, then a human looks at it, and they look at, like, 40 of these a minute and make a yes or no, like a delete or keep decision in, like, a second or less than 2 seconds. So that's really clunky, and you always end up with things that, like, you know, are far less harsh getting deleted on Facebook, and things that are far more harsh getting kept on Facebook. And actually, like, there's a big turnover rate with the people who do this kind of screening for Facebook and other companies, because like basically what gets flagged is like, you know, severed heads being waved in your face and like, you know, multiple penetration porn and like animal torture and just like the most horrible of the horrible. And people like sit around for 8 hours a day looking at hundreds of those images, and it really takes the toll on them. So, you know, they tend to quit that job pretty quick. But what they're working toward is having AI do it all, like having artificial intelligence do it. And it'll probably get to the point where it's not only like censoring things that are generally censored, like, you know, violence or porn or threats, but it's going to get to the point where, like, you know, any speech that's fun is going to get censored by these AI bots, these, you know, nanny bots. So that's where we're headed, people.
Mm-hmm.
The same machines that are going to be droning people without people being involved are going to be deciding what of your free speech gets to be free.
They're trigger bots. Designed to block anything that would trigger.
I really think you should write down that idea to make trigger warning stickers for all your merch.
Oh, I'm already working on it.
Yep. All right. We'll be back.
Worms.
With some tales of how I got signed to and kicked off a major label after this trip to the market.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now. Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
Meow.
Meow.
Meow, meow, meow. Meow, meow, meow.
Yeah, that's weird. Yep.
Yaks are sexy.
Shut up, robot. This robot's weird. All right, so I'm going to tell a horrifying story of me getting signed to and then kicked off a major label. So we ended up on Warner Brothers, my band Bomb, in 1990 for about a year. We did one record in Warner Brothers and got kicked off. Here's before we got signed, we were going to get signed to a better deal with Interscope Records, which would have been a better label for us to be on. So we were playing a show in LA with Rage Against the Machine before they were signed at a small club called Club Lingerie. And, you know, it was pretty packed. They drew people. No one in LA knew us. We were big in San Francisco, but not in, and big weird places like from touring, like Columbus, Ohio, we were big. In Toledo, Ohio, we were big, but like, you know, Athens, Ohio, no one knew who we were. It was just how touring went back then before the internet. So we were playing, opening for Rage Against the Machine at Club Lingerie in LA, probably about 200 people in a club that probably held about 150. And it's the old Club Lingerie, it was smaller than the new one. So this lady from Interscope comes to see us, really likes our show, comes backstage after and starts saying to the manager, our manager and me, and I was really drunk by then. I didn't drink much on stage, but I got hammered right after the show. And I've told this story before, but it's good, and it's the thing that comes to mind in the sense of business failures I've made. So good label comes backstage, wants to sign us. The lady, you know, says, hey, I think we can do some business here. So I thought, what would Jim Morrison do? So I dropped my pants and kind of wiggled
That's
it.
That's an important question.
Wiggled it at her, you know, my little flaccid thingy. And she looked at me and said, well, I don't think I can do business with you. And don't worry, I'm not going to make a big thing out of this. And then she looked down at me and said, not that I could, and walked out. So that was like one of the biggest business mistakes I ever made. And then the other one
So was, what would Jim Morrison do? Not good business advice? Is that the rule of thumb?
Yeah. I think by the time Jim Morrison was doing that kind of things, they were too big to be stopped, though.
Maybe. He was also like a front man. He wasn't the negotiator.
Yeah. They probably kept him away. The business people probably kept him away from the label. So, second big mistake, once we got on Warner Brothers, this is how we got dropped from Warner Brothers. So, we were one of the first bands that the label put one of those stickers on that said, you know, parental advisory, whatever. Like, you know, 1990, that was happening. That's when that started. And we were one of the first bands that had it put on our record. It wasn't even a sticker. It was part of the artwork. So, my drummer was so offended by that. And actually, like, the F word was in one song out of 10 songs, and it was three times, and it was kind of quiet, but it was like, had to be on there, Warner Brothers said. So, and it was a romantic use of the word. It wasn't crass. It was, baby, I want to, you know, until I die. I want to blank you until I die. I want to blank you until I die. That's romantic, man. That's not crass at all. So it was a beautiful thing.
Parental advisory, romantic lyrics.
Yes. I like the one that Iggy Pop put. He put the same design and said, parental advisory, this is an Iggy Pop record. But so my drummer was so offended that we had to put that on there, that we were being censored. And he was like, you know, these congressmen's wives that are making us do this are Nazis. You know, it was Al Gore's wife, basically. So if you think Al Gore is a cool guy, remember, he's the guy, his wife is the one that censored rock records, and he encouraged her to. You know, they never censored country records, which can have as much sex, violence, murder, and theft and fraud and aggression as any rock and roll ever did, because Al Gore was the senator, the congressman for Nashville, you know, so they never did it for, he was a Tennessee guy. So, but, so my drummer decided, my drummer wanted to put a swastika sticking out from behind that sticker, and we had it mocked up by the art department at Warner Brothers. One of the Jewish presidents of Warner Brothers happened to come down to the art department, walk through, see this on someone's desk, and said, who is Warner Brothers and why are they on our label? And they didn't dump us because they didn't want to be considered, you know, censoring. So they just never supported the record and like put it out, but never promoted it and never really went to stores. That's how they dumped us. All right. That was a big mistake.
And it's Al Gore's fault.
It's Al Gore's fault. I blame the government. Because government. Because government. Because government. We'll be back for hour two after this trip to the market. No dropouts tonight. I like it. We fixed things on the Fiend Phone server. Worms.
For some reason in this country, and in a bunch of lesser world, it's okay to just dodge.
Hey, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. Computer programmer Derek Slopey and I have created Fiend Phone. I'm using Fiend Phone right now to talk with and record one of my co-hosts in real time. Take it, Davi.
Hey, this is Davi Barker, and I'm 1,000 miles away from Michael, but we sound like we're in the same room.
We sure do, Davi. So, Davi, please tell the nice people more about Fiend Phone.
Fiend Phone is free, no-gov software that opens up a global world of possibilities for collaborative, high-quality, remote voice media production, and I'm digging it.
People can try FiendPhone right now at FiendPhone.com, but we're also raising money to vastly improve FiendPhone and vastly improve independent talk media worldwide.
So go to FiendPhone.com to help out. Who will build the audio roads? We will, with your help.
That's FiendPhone.com, FeenPhone.com, Foxtrot, Echo, November, Phone.com.
FiendPhone, I never knew remote audio could be this good.
No. Meow, meow, meow.
Meh.
We got a robot?
I don't know. I think he's out having a smoke.
This is the Yaks Freedom are sexy. Fiends infecting Yaks your are brain sexy. With pandemics Yaks of liberty.
Yaks are sexy.
How's that?
That's pretty good. Close enough.
Barack Obama is a liar, a socialist, and his feet stink.
Yep, we're ready. So you want to talk about how you hate Saudis. Not, you don't hate Saudis. You hate Saudi Arabia. There's a difference. Explain the difference.
It's not prejudice, okay? I hate royals of all varieties. And it just so happens that in Arabia, the royals are from the Saud family.
Does anyone call it Arabia? I thought that's what it was called.
I
like
do.
100 years ago. Oh, because isn't the Saudi the name of the last name of the family? The sods?
Yes. Sod, and then the Arabic modifier for possession is the I, right? So yeah. Pakistan.
So it'd be like,
Danny,
it'd
Yemen, be like Yemeni, Sod, Saudi.
This country to like, you know, Obama America. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. That is precisely what it is.
Yeah.
And one of the, you know, great innovations of the Saudi system is to ban women from driving, which is not the norm in any... Just ban everything.
And you used to live there.
It's not the norm in any other Muslim country, and it's not really based on religion in any way, shape, or form. And the justifications for it are completely absurd. Like, they recently had one of their spokespeople from the Department of Enjoining Good and Forbidding Evil say that... the reason women aren't allowed to drive is because if women are allowed to drive, they'll go out alone and then they'll get raped. And you Westerners, you let women drive because you don't care if they're raped. That's what he said.
That sounds like and, I mean, American I'm paraphrasing, liberals. But that's American liberal logic. Man. Yeah.
It's So it's Looney Tunes over there, but there are civil disobedience activists who take up the arm of driving without permission. And I just think it's really awesome to see that this happens. And one such activist is this musician.
MIA.
MIA. Do you know what MIA stands for?
Well, it's her name, but it also stands for Missing in Action.
Well, she has it abbreviated it's on her name. Album covers abbreviated. And things. Oh, so her name is Mia?
No. It's
no.
So this is her song protesting that women can't drive in Saudi Arabia, and it looks like it's filmed. The video looks like it's filmed in Saudi Arabia, and it's got women driving. Although it's hard to tell because they're wearing like head to toe. You can only see like their eyes, but it's actually filmed in Morocco because she would have gone to jail. She said filming this in Saudi Arabia. It's an amazing song, and it's actually. The reason I went and looked at this again was because it's in that show we really like, Orphan Black. It's actually the song that's kind of the montage.
Oh, it is?
When the main character is taking over the other girl's identity. Yeah, when Sarah is in the dead girl Beth's apartment, like looking at videos that she has of herself, like trying to learn to talk like her and dressing in her clothes and taking over her personality and her identity, this song is playing. It's not really clear if it's
cool,
if she's listening to it or if it's soundtrack, but describe this video. It's so amazing. It kind of looks like a really high budget, like cologne commercial. I mean, it's got like people drifting and driving cars on two wheels and horses running on the side and, you know, Middle Eastern women dressed, you know, with like face coverings, but also like really, really stylish. Now, would this dress...
It's low budget, fast and... Furious. It that's is. What it is.
Yeah. Yeah. It's would the way these women are dressed be acceptable in Saudi Arabia? I mean, they're wearing their faces are covered and their whole bodies are covered, but they're wearing like leopard print, psychedelic, you know, head to toe.
So, common misconception in American terms that the dress code is a state's rights issue in Saudi Arabia.
It's different. So in there's different no locations.
Like federal. It's different in different in providences or whatever.
States
and so in the
tyrannize.
More conservative regions, yeah. in the more conservative regions, I don't remember the names of them. It's like it's the all black abaya and face mask. And in the more progressive regions, you can like wear fun colors and things. But I think that the face mask is not mandatory in all places, but I think that the head covering is, unless you're a non-Muslim tourist, and then it's not required.
I wonder if this video in any way was inspired by that American Dad two or three part cartoon Stan of Arabia, where it's got one point where his wife like takes off her conservative dress and does a strip tease on top of a car in the town square, singing about the joys of dancing, like singing a Broadway musical kind of song, and dancing on a car, I think. And then she gets shot at and stops.
Maybe, but I mean, really, both of these things are inspired by the prohibition itself.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
there you go.
I hate to be repetitive, but imposed order equals escalation of disorder.
Is that your line? Is that your saying?
No, it's actually Robert Anton Wilson originally, I think. I may have distilled it down into a mathematical equation, but I got it from him. I got the concept from him.
It's pretty cool.
That's the fact of the matter. The fact that you're imposing dress codes on people against their will means that people will resent that and come up with similar forms of protest. And it's just a law of nature. Sorry, guys.
Yep. Yep. Tell me more.
And, you know, the fact that it's a completely absurd... The thing is, like, women are not uneducated in Saudi Arabia. I mean, that's sort of the interesting thing. Like, yeah, they're pilots. Women are allowed to fly planes.
They can't drive cars, but they're allowed to drive cars. That's bizarre.
There was a story about a female pilot who was interviewed by some magazine, and the sort of the joke of the headline was that she's not allowed to drive herself to work, but she's then allowed to get in a plane and fly in and out of the country.
Is that because there's men on the plane to keep an eye on her?
Maybe. I have no idea, like, what kind of crazy justifications they come up with for these rules. So I don't know that the rape thing is the original purpose of this prohibition. That's just what the guy said recently. I have a feeling that they're going to keep shifting the purpose of the prohibition because they don't want to give it up. And so they'll just keep, you know, this is like when you don't have a good reason, you just keep gravitating towards some new reason until it's debunked.
Like with marijuana, one, right? You know, they're like, there's actually organizations like Citizens for Retaining the Illegality of Marijuana that have names like that. That's not the real name of one, but they're generally made up of like cops and school teachers, but, and actually some of them are secretly funded by medical marijuana places or legal marijuana places, 'cause they want to maintain their market share square.
But they want to keep it, illegal so that
licensed, like, you know,
so, yeah. It's a protection racket. Got it. Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. And they try to come up with these reasons and they just sound absurd. In this day and age, trying to give any legitimate reason why marijuana should be illegal is clinging to the horse. Well, hit me with buggies. One.
What's a reason? I've never come across any of these.
It's a gateway drug.
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah.
People still say that?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not a gateway any more than like milk is a gateway to heroin, because, like, you know, most heroin addicts smoked pot before they did heroin, but it's not a matter of... And this is really true with me. Like, I'm a good example. Like, I smoked pot before I did heroin, but it's not like I tried pot and got used to it and it said, I need something stronger. It was like, my body wanted heroin and I didn't even know what that was. And pot was available in my small town when I was 14 in 1978. You know, I could not have gotten heroin in any way back then. Like, that was a big city thing back then, but it was like my body wanted narcotics. That's the only drugs I really like ever. But
okay,
you know, but pot was available and I just, like, it wasn't that I did pot and got used to it and needed something stronger. It was like I wanted the stronger thing from day one and just didn't know it existed until I found it. So I did what was around, you know. I also drank milk before I did heroin, but milk didn't lead to heroin.
I mean, the gateway drug thing is just on its face. It's a slippery slope fallacy, right? And it's the gateway drug argument is why women wear face coverings in Saudi Arabia, because some legal scholar somewhere said, if you let women show their faces, then they'll be showing their hair. And if you let them show their hair, well, then they'll be showing their necks. And if you let them show their necks, next thing you know, they'll be doing strip teases on top of cars in the middle of Riyadh. And it's a gateway garment.
Where they're drifting in Western fashions. Well, it's actually like right. Western versions of Middle Eastern fashions. What's going on in this video?
Yeah, it's fusion. It's fusion fashion.
It's an amazing video. I love it. It's not. I don't even like this kind of music, and this is catchy though.
Yeah,
I
me
love
either.
The video, man. The video is amazing.
I just people need to just get that gateway anything is not a real thing.
You know,
it's not a real.
There's
thing.
Actually a really good market economics lesson in the making of this video. I saw this video where she talked about the making of it, and mm-hmm. You know, there's like a scene in there where she is shown driving in a clear car, like a transparent car.
Yeah.
And it's only shown for like 3 seconds. I wish they showed a lot more of it because it's pretty cool. But so she like commissioned some company in India to make that car because that'd be the cheap place to get it made. And they said they could make it no problem, but it would take 5 months to ship to Morocco to get it through customs and everything.
Okay.
So what she did was she just like had like 20 people from that company. Like she flew them to Morocco and had them build the car there in like a week.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
It's construction tourism.
Yes. Yes. Like sourcing it with local parts from Morocco. They didn't even bring the parts. They just brought the people that couldn't knew how to put it together. Build it.
That's interesting. So why wouldn't there be anybody in Morocco that could figure out how to do it if it was still cheap enough to manufacture it in Morocco?
Because the Indian workers were a lot cheaper. She probably could get it done in Morocco, but the cost would have been much higher.
That's
for the labor. It was cheaper to fly them to Morocco and put them up in hotels for a week than it would have been to hire local.
Medical tourism needs to go the other way. It needs to not necessarily be like flying to Thailand to have your molars drilled, but instead to fly a dentist to San Francisco.
There you go.
To have your molars drilled.
Yeah, that probably wouldn't be legal though.
Yeah, that's true. It'd probably be illegal.
Yeah, I'm in the market for a couple lungs. If anybody's got a line on some cheap good ones,
get some cheap lungs.
Nick, how much you sell one of your lungs before? Nick, you're healthy. You don't do drugs. You don't smoke.
I'm not selling my lungs, but
dude, I'll give you $5,000.
I'll give you some.
I'll give you $5,000.
That could buy me 2 yaks.
This is worse than child labor.
Wow.
This is so much worse than child labor.
This is what agorism looks like, people.
Hey, there's some Squiscar Squiggles from Death Clocks. And you are listening to the Freedoms Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess it says worms now, so there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing. Buttons! Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed, buy sheep for sheep on sheep, and 2 designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Yeah.
So we just talked right into the break. I missed the transition. Where did we get cut off?
I don't know. Oh, I know.
Anarchy is 2 yaks and a lung deciding on where to go for surgery.
Yeah. So we...
There you go.
First of all, I want to make it clear I was kidding when I offered Nick $5,000, young Nick $5,000 for his lung.
But I lost my lung in a boating accident.
I left my lung in San Francisco. I like how there's all these memes of me now, like in an iron lung. Iron lungs haven't been around since like the 50s, I think. But I sort of have an iron lung. I have a box in the other room that sucks oxygen out of the air and pumps it in a tube up my nose. So I do think, though, that is kind of one of the things that statists believe a libertarian paradise would be that there would be unregulated radio shows where children call in to have adults bid on their body parts, their organs without parental consent. Yes.
It could be the other way around. It could be that radio shows give away lungs as contests, like the fifth caller gets a kidney.
You might do it in India. You know, there's actually one country, I forget which one, but it's in the Middle East, and you can actually like sell organs there. Do you know what country that is?
Probably Dubai. That sounds like Dubai.
No, I think it's Iran, actually.
Iran. Well, Iran's not the Middle East, man. Get your geography straight.
What is it?
It's Persia.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm a Westerner. It's all the Middle East to me, man.
I'm pretty sure Iran is considered East, not Middle East, but it's just something people argue about.
Nathan just wrote and said, or people will sell their young lungs and advertise by dancing on cars. Yeah. Like, oh, she's got healthy lungs or she wouldn't be able to dance on that drifting car on two wheels. Yeah.
Yeah, look at her drink. That's some good liver.
Look at her drink. That's some good liver, man. Man, you're wrong, man.
That's how it goes. So where do we leave? I think we left off with something about medical tourism and India and flying people to... Oh, we were talking about Saudi Arabia. We were bashing Saudis. That's what we were doing.
And you like doing that. But here, I found some information. I can share this with the whole class.
I like information.
Yeah? Are you willing to pay for it?
Do you have enough for the whole class?
You trade a lung for it?
Don't bring information if you don't have enough for the whole class.
Iran has been the only nation that allows the legal buying and selling of organs. Iran has been the only nation that allows the legal buying and selling of organs.
There you go.
Man, you know, that's self-ownership, right?
That's true. Yeah. Yeah, I guess the theory is that if it was legal to buy and sell organs,
there'd be a market for it.
Well, rich people would get organs and poor people would not. And they'd all the poor people would be walking around with one lung and one kidney, one
eye.
Poor
people aren't getting organs now. If there was a market in organs, it would reduce the price of organs, and then poor people would be able to afford them.
Poor people do get organs now. Actually, if you have health insurance, you can get organ transplants. They'll cover most of it. Especially now with the Obamacare thing of, you know, I got to say, I picked a really good time to get a, like, life-threatening progressive illness. Because with the Obamacare thing, like, you can't be turned down for health insurance for a pre-existing condition. And somebody actually told me I should, like, thank Obama for that. And I'm like, F that, man. I mean, that's something, put it this way. You know, if I'm going to be the guy that pays $600 a month health insurance and ends up getting $6,000 a month worth of health care, you know, tilting the scale, what you got to understand, or anybody needs to understand who's saying I should praise Obama for that, is the health insurance companies, like, pushed hard to make this happen. So they're aware that that kind of thing will happen. And they're still, you know, making far more money having everybody have to be insured now. So there. But
I wonder how much you can blame the detrimental health effects of cigarettes on regulation and prohibition of cigarettes.
Well, I also got to say that the class of illnesses that I have, and like I said, I'm still, it's going to take further testing to find out exactly which one it is, but it's a, what's it called? Reductive, responsive, rejective, I forget. I can't even remember what I have. It's a restrictive lung disease. And there's like 10 of them. Unlike COPD, which is generally caused by smoking or asbestos, restrictive lung diseases are not necessarily caused by smoking. So I didn't necessarily do this to myself. They can just come out of nowhere for no reason. So, yep. In legal markets in Iran, a kidney is $2,000 to $4,000. But in the black market, the price can be $160,000. Boy, that's...
Wait, if it's legal, why is there a black market?
That's true. Why don't they have it like the Iranian Walmart? Like drive-through surgery.
Clean up in the organ aisle.
Somehow we're out and have been out for minutes now, I guess.
No, it just came, huh?
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty Talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Uh-huh. I'm losing my voice.
Barack Obama is a liar. A socialist and his feet stink. Barack Obama is a liar. A socialist and his feet stink.
It's true.
Anarchy is nifty.
It is nifty.
Anarcho-communism not even once.
This one kind of has to be in the Indian woman's voice.
Anarcho-communists are silly and have the logic of tiny, small, little, girly man-children.
Yep. All right. So you guys want to talk about mothers against protesting, right?
Yeah. Map.
Yeah. Go ahead.
This story's been bounced around all my Facebook friends, and everybody's complaining about this. Either they're complaining about the mother or the kid who's protesting. But there is this kid in Baltimore. He was probably in his late teens. Maybe he was 19. I don't know. But he was protesting and doing whatever the protesters do, smash windows and stuff. But his mom came out, and I guess she just started hitting him. And, you know, she didn't appreciate his rioting.
His political views. She didn't appreciate his political views.
She wanted him to toe the line. She wanted him to be a good boy and just keep his head down and not make waves.
Right. And so a lot of people are upset. That's about half and half, it seems, of the people I hear from say, yeah, that kid should have been beat. She should have hit him harder. Ugh. And then there's so many other people who are like, no, she's a terrible person, and she's part of the problem. That's why he's using violence, and that's why he's rioting, is because he's been taught to use violence to solve his problem.
Thanks for helping me save a few $100 on healthcare that's thousands of dollars more expensive because government.
Jim Jesus.
What a savings.
Sent that. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it's actually like my experience with, I went to a boarding school that was like 1/3 inner city black kids, and it kind of seems to be a black cultural thing of like, with older, you know, parents and grandparents, like, keep your head down, don't make waves kind of thing. And it doesn't surprise me that this happened. Although I really think this kid needs to listen to the lady that we read the filing of last night. If you want a good black role model, she was awesome.
Yeah.
I sent her an email and told her that we read it on the air, and she wrote back and was really appreciative and said that she'll listen, that she will listen on the radio when it plays this Saturday on
cool.
In her town, Pensacola. Tama Jada Clark, that's her name. Yeah, she does not keep her head down. We like that about her.
Part of my problem with this whole story is that nobody has said what he was doing that she was upset about. Like, so there are some protesters who are out there breaking windows and burning cars, and there's this guy that his mom saw him and he was wearing a mask or something, but there's no part of the story is what he was doing that earned him this anger. People just assume because he was there, he must have been doing all the same stuff as the other protesters, and so therefore the anger against him is justified. Well, what if he wasn't, right? Like, what if he was one of the many protesters who was there cleaning up the place? What if he was one of the many protesters who were there standing holding a sign and not breaking
things?
What if
he was one of the protesters protecting the cops? Did you see that picture?
No, I didn't see that picture.
Whoa. Yeah, there's a picture of like a line of riot cops with a line of mostly young black men standing right in front of them, between them and the rowdy crowd, like protecting the cops. It's the weirdest thing, man.
Okay.
Yeah.
But like, it seems like that's a necessary part of the story, doesn't it? If you're going to say that he deserved to get beat up by his mom, and I don't think it's a good solution
anyway.
Well,
most people say that kind of stuff are idiots.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. The problem with this sort of story is it's just idiots all around. Like, there's no protagonist in these stories.
It's idiots all around. I don't know. There were probably protesters that were not idiots, like you said.
Yeah. No, that's true. There absolutely were. But I guess the headlines are, let's cover the idiots of both sides. Because, you know, breaking windows and burning cars has nothing to do with what you're upset about, which is, you know, police brutality.
Idiots everywhere.
Yeah.
It's the thing, it's circular, right? So police kill people because they're militarized. Police are militarized because they put down mobs of angry people who are angry at them being militarized. Right? Like, it's a vicious cycle.
Yeah. I'm going to send you guys the lyrics for a Dead Kennedy song, Riot, and have you both read them, because I really like these lyrics, and they're from like late 70s, early 80s, and as true then as it was now, like most Dead Kennedy's lyrics. Yeah. So, idiots everywhere, man. What do you do?
It's true.
Yeah, it's true.
I don't know what you do. I sit it out, you know? I find something more productive to do with my time.
Well, I pretty much have a good health excuse to never leave my house again, but or, you know, to not do it much because it's not very easy now that it needs like scuba tanks to do. I didn't really like to leave my house much anyway once I got sober. When I was doing drugs and drinking, it was pretty easy to deal with the crowds and the stupid idiots everywhere. But now I'm kind of like, nah, man, I want to just stay home with a good computer and my wife and get more cats. So did you guys get this email yet for the lyrics?
I got it from you. Yeah. You want to just read, you want me to just read the whole thing?
Yeah. Why don't you each read a stanza, you know, like read, tell us a break and the next person read it.
All right.
Put some emotion
in it. Start.
Too.
Nick, you got it open?
Yeah, I got it open.
I don't know the song, so I don't know that I can put, I can't sing it or anything.
No, go ahead.
But, rioting, the unbeatable high, adrenaline shoots your nerves to the sky. Everyone knows this town is going to blow. And it's going to blow right now.
Nick?
Now you can smash all the windows that you want. All you really need are some friends and a rock. Throwing a brick never felt so damn good. Smash more glass, scream with laugh, and wallow with the crowds. Watch them kicking people's ass.
Okay. Davi?
But you get to the place where the real slave drivers live. It's walled off by the riot squad, aiming guns right at your head. So you turn right around and play right into their hands and set your own neighborhood burning to the ground instead.
And this is the chorus. Nick, do the chorus.
Riot the unbeatable high. Riot shoots your nerves to the sky. Riot playing into their hands. Tomorrow you're homeless. Tonight it's a blast.
Yep, Davi.
Get your kicks in quick. You're calling. They're calling the National Guard. Now could be your only chance to torch a police car.
Nick,
climb the roof, kick the siren in, and jump and yelp for joy. Quickly dive back in the crowd, slip away. Now don't get caught.
For those who don't get it yet, this is not a pro rioting song. It's an anti rioting song, and it talks about the consequences. Coming up right here. Go ahead.
Let's loot the spiffy hi-fi store. Grab as much as you can hold. Pray your full arms don't fall off. Here comes the owner with a gun.
Yeah.
Not the chorus, but no. The next thing. All right. The barricades spring up from nowhere. Cops and helmets line the lines. Shotguns prod into your bellies. The trigger fingers want an excuse now.
The raging mob has lost its nerve. There's more of us, but who goes first? No one dares to cross the line. The cops know that they've won.
Nick.
It's all over, but not quite. The pigs have just begun to fight. They club your heads, kick your teeth. Police can riot all that they please.
Yes, they can. And then the chorus.
Tomorrow you're homeless. Tonight it's a blast.
Yeah, very true song. And I always took this line out of context. Tomorrow you're homeless. Tonight it's a blast. And applied it to methamphetamine abuse. It fits for sure. That. Yeah.
I mean, it's so textbook misplaced aggression, you know, like to hit up a grocery store, to hit up an electronics store, to burn Nikes from Foot Locker.
Burn your own neighborhood to the ground instead, like this song says.
Yeah. Like, I don't get it at all. And I'm all for, you know, people taking their causes seriously and protesting and whatever, you know, I want to see people being serious in their activism and even taking risks at times, but take meaningful risks for God's sake. Like it seems to me like it's an excuse. It's not a strategy.
Yeah.
And that bugs me.
Yeah. There's some really true stuff in here that, you know, cops can riot all that they please. And, the weird thing too is like whenever there's cops in riot gears, you know, it's like that thing, like if you want to know who's going to this scene for a riot, look who's dressed for a riot. You know, the cops generally start the riots, although, you know, in a crowd of 1,000 people there's generally 20 or 30 idiots that want to break stuff no matter what, who like aren't even there for the cause. They're just there because it's an excuse, you know.
Yeah,
but the cops are always ready.
I met those guys at Occupy.
Yeah,
you know what, this sort of like gets into the sort of libertarian, like when to shoot a cop conversation. And I had this conversation with the commies at Occupy, and really what it was the people who were saying, no, it's okay to throw a bottle or a rock at a cop because they're aggressing first. They're the ones who want to hide behind the crowd. So that's great. They get to have all this righteous indignation about retaliating against like illegitimate force, but then they use innocent bystanders as body shields. So you kind of like, you lose human your credibility, shields. You know, like, cowards, and that's always, what you're doing.
Anyone that uses human shields is always a coward.
And, but that's what they're doing when they throw a rock and then they jump into a crowd. It's because they're hoping one of those innocent people gets caught instead of them.
It's like the line in the song we just saw. Yeah. Climb the roof, kick the siren in, jump and yelp for joy. Quickly dive back in the crowd, slip away now, don't get caught.
Yeah, no, I met that guy. That guy was at Occupy Oakland, and I argued with him for hours, and that's the mentality.
Sometimes that guy...
He's not there to promote any sort of cause or anything. He just wants to throw a bottle at a cop. That's why he's there.
Sometimes he is a cop.
And they... Yeah, I don't know about this guy, but some of them are. But here's the thing. They wanted to really, like, this was a big thing in the Occupy movement of, like, solidarity with the Arab Spring, because they were going on around the same time. But you look at those protesters throwing things at cops in the Arab Spring, and they're standing in the middle of the street by themselves. They're not jumping behind innocent bystanders. They're taking responsibility for their actions.
And the responsibility, the results for getting caught for that are probably... deeper
death or worse
over there than here it's getting beat up and thrown in a cage. There it's probably worse.
Yeah, for sure.
Yep. All right, we're out.
Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say, you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists like Barack Obama and Al Gore taking credit for the web while trying to take over the web? Are you disgusted by experts whose concept of the internet is that it's a series of tubes? Take back the free market of computing by encouraging software developers to adopt the BIPCOT NoGov license. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows any use or modification except by governments. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Anti-war, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
Worms.
Yeah. Worms.
It's all true. Every word of it. Yep. I've seen it.
Yeah. Whatever that means.
So I was interviewed today.
Me too.
By a college student with a project. And one of the questions was like, well, how do you identify politically? And I'm like, I don't even know if there are words to describe me politically anymore.
Yeah.
Because she wanted me to sort of narrow it down to some word with a party, right? And so I said, I guess like libertarian, but
not party.
That's sort of square. And so, definitely not the party, but like a word that is sort of common to political parlance. The only one is really libertarian. And so she finally like says, well, how do you self-identify? And I say, voluntarist and agorist are the words I mostly use for myself, and they're essentially the same thing, except that voluntarist is a philosophy and agorist is a strategy. And that's sort of why we've been talking about business and why we've been talking about business strategy and things like that. That is what agorism is. It comes from agora, which is Greek for the market, and it's about replacing the current market with an alternative market, replacing the current economy with an alternative economy, one that is voluntary and consensual and mutually beneficial and not based on these sort of regressive, violent, coercive, fraudulent government regulations, subsidies, mandates, and perverse incentives.
Yeah.
That's the hope, right? The hope is that you can get from one economy to the other, from one market to the other, from where we are now to a place where you can buy lungs with yaks if everybody agrees.
I found the most dire picture to use for this. It's like from some article about that urban myth about, you know, people waking up passed out in a bathtub in a hotel room. And it's a picture of like a girl about Nick's age lying in a bathtub unconscious with like a giant scar where her kidney should be. Oh man, this is horrid. I'm going to use it. I'm going to use it for sure. All right. Libertarian paradise, man. Teenagers selling their organs on radio shows for yaks. This girl doesn't look like she'd buy yaks. Yeah. She looks like she'd buy like the latest iPhone with her kidney.
That's the way to do it.
Yes. So tell me more. Nick, what do you think about, how do you define yourself? Now, Nick's a nihilist. Does that fit into, like, if someone asks you your political view or worldview? Are you an anarcho-nihilist?
So if there's five branches of philosophy, there's metaphysics and epistemology, then ethics, politics, and aesthetics. Politically, I don't think nihilism really fits with anything. It's not, at least with my own beliefs, I would say politically I'm an anarchist.
Yeah.
Like the way I organize it is ethically I'm a voluntarist. And if politics is, how to apply our ethics to philosophy, I mean to society, then, if I'm a voluntarist in my ethical beliefs, then I would be an anarchist in my political beliefs.
Yeah. Tell me what nihilism is. For those who don't know, it sounds horrible, but sure. It's not. I'm a nihilist, I think.
They had the most uninteresting table at the Anarchist Book Fair. They looked like they belonged to Abnegation from the Divergent movie. Like everything was gray. They were using concrete blocks as really? Paperweights and really? Bookshelves. Yeah. Like, yeah.
That's awesome.
There you go. The nihilist. Well, I would picture, like, taking it to the extreme, the nihilist would just have. They'd be wearing all black, staring blankly into space, and have a table with nothing on it.
Yeah.
Nothing. Yeah. What are you selling? Nothingness. Absolutely nothing. The lack of anything. Okay, Nick, that's the cliche. What is it really?
It's the rejection of any form of objective truth or meaning. So existential nihilism is the idea that nothing has any inherent value. Yeah, well, that would be moral.
And it's not. It's nihilism. Not immoral. It's amoral. There's a difference. What's the difference?
That's exactly right. Immoral is bad. Amoral is indifferent.
It's a lack of, yeah. So basically, you don't kill teenagers and take their organs because it's immoral. You do it because it's not profitable and it doesn't make you feel good.
Right.
Right. All right.
That's exactly right.
Good for you, Nick. I'm glad you've made those decisions. And it's been a good show, guys. We're out.
Worms.
Worms.
Idiots everywhere. Barack Obama is a liar. A socialist and his feet stink. Barack Obama is a liar. A socialist and his feet stink. Barack Obama is a liar. A socialist and his feet stink.
Yaks are sexy.